on how much power we have to wield. Everyone, including the secularist scientists. Tithonium Chasma, morning. From up in the cockpit, Hasdrubal heard water running in the lavatory. Turning, he saw Rosenberg shuffling through the narrow gap between their two bunks. "Looking kind of bleary this morning," he said cheerfully. Still in his skivvies, Rosenberg plopped into the right-hand cockpit seat and winced. "It's cold," he said. "Put on your coveralls, you'll warm up." Rosenberg nodded glumly. "Had breakfast?" "Nope. I've been waiting for you."
"I'll boil some water."
Rosenberg got up from the seat, the bare skin of his legs making a soft sucking sound against the pseudo-leather. "The solar cells are recharging the batteries," Hasdrubal called back to the galley.
"Good,"
said Rosenberg. "Thought you'd want to know. Make you feel better."
"Thanks."
While Rosenberg dressed, Hasdrubal checked in with the controller back at base. Once he started smelling the instant coffee, Hasdrubal ended his call and, turning, saw that Rosenberg had pulled up the table between their bunks. He got up and went to his bunk as Rosenberg put down two bowls of boiled oatmeal and a pair of steaming mugs of coffee.
"When do we start back?"
Rosenberg asked, sliding onto his bunk. "Base wants us to bring back some of the hopper's wreckage."
"For diagnosis?"
"Yeah." Looking forward through the camper's cockpit windows, Rosenberg said,
"There isn't that much to retrieve."
"Accident investigation people back Earthside want as much as we can show them. Help them nail down the cause of the explosion."
"But we already know that, don't we?"
"Not officially." Rosenberg frowned and muttered something too low for Hasdrubal to hear. "I'll do it," the black biologist said. "You don't have to go out."
"I'll go with you."
"You don't have to if you don't want to."
"I want to. I shouldn't let this get to me the way it did last night."
"Hey, we all get the spooks one time or another."
"You didn't."
"I got my troubles, man."
"Such as?"
Hasdrubal grimaced. "Don't tell anybody." Rosenberg looked up at him.
"Of course not."
"Promise?"
"Yes, certainly. What is it?"
"I'm scared of spiders."
"Spiders?"
"Saw some dumbass video when I was a kid about giant spiders eating people. Scared the shit out of me. Still does." Rosenberg broke into a gentle smile.
"Well, in that case, my friend, I suggest you stay on Mars. The nearest spider is millions of kilometers away."
Carter Carlton felt nervous in the flimsy nanosuit. He had to admit that it was lighter and much more flexible than the hard shell he usually wore to go outside the dome, but still, there was nothing between him and the near vacuum of the Martian atmosphere except a layer of nanofabric no more than a few molecules thick. He knew it was his imagination, but he could feel the hard radiation from deep space slashing through the transparent fabric and tearing apart the DNA in his body's cells. Walking beside him, Doreen McManus asked, "Isn't this better than that clunky old heart suit?" "I suppose," Carlton said, without his heart in it. "The things a man will do just to get laid," he told himself. "Not that Doreen's made an issue of it. She's damned persistent, though." They had spent the day at the dig as usual, Carlton wearing his heart suit. But once they came back inside at the end of the long hours and vacuumed off the dust they'd picked up, Doreen had quickly peeled off her nanosuit and started to help Carlton with his more cumbersome outfit.
"It's like a knight's armor," Doreen said as she helped Carlton lift the torso up over his head.
"That's one of the things I like about these old suits," Carlton rejoined. "The romance of it all." She laughed.
"You're just a fuddy-duddy."
"I'm glad you didn't say an old fuddy-duddy." Once they had tucked the various pieces of his suit into its locker, Carlton started toward the cafeteria. But Doreen reached for his arm.
"Carter, wait."
"You're not hungry?"
"No, not now."
"I'm starving. How can you spend all day out in the field and not work up an appetite?"
Suddenly she looked pained. "Carter, we've got to talk."
A twitch of alarm flashed through him. "Talk?" "That means trouble," he knew. "Always."
Doreen said, "Let's go outside."
"Outside? Again? We just got back."
"Please, just for a few minutes. You can wear a nanosuit. It won't take you more than a minute or two to get into it." I don't understand. For me, Carter, please.
He stood there gazing into her big gray-green eyes. They were troubled, he saw, even though she was trying to smile for him. All right, he said, wondering if this was just a ploy to get him to try the damn nanosuit. Now they stood a dozen paces outside the main airlock, Carlton feeling decidedly edgy in the flimsy suit with the ridiculous inflated balloon of a helmet over his head. Doreen stood in moody silence beside him. It was nearly sunset. Temperature must be down to 50 below, Carlton groused to himself. Still, he had to admit, it's comfortable enough inside this glorified raincoat. Except for the radiation. The thought made his skin crawl. To their left rose the towering cliffs of the canyon, the slanting rays of the setting sun casting shadows that brought out every seam and wrinkle in the ancient rocks. The glowing disk of the sun hung above the horizon on their right, small and wan, reminding Carlton that they were a long, long way from home. All right, he said, with a cheerfulness he didn't really feel. I'm wearing the suit. Are you satisfied?
Carter, we have to talk.
That again. Doreen reached into the pouch on her right thigh and pulled out a hair-thin wire. Plugging it into a hardly visible socket on the collar ring of her suit, she held the other end out to Carlton. He stepped closer and let her plug the wire into his suit's receptacle.
There. Now we can talk without using the radios.
So no one can overhear us, Carlton realized. Her voice sounded different over the wire, edgier, brittle. Trying to hide his growing irritation, Carlton asked,
What's this all about, Dory? There's going to be a resupply mission arriving in another 6 weeks, she said.
Yes, it's supposed to bring that priest from the Vatican with it.
And take a dozen people who want to leave Mars.
At last he understood. You're not leaving.
Yes, I am, Carter.
Her voice was so low he barely could hear it. But why? Where are you going?
Back to Selene, said Doreen. That's my home. It's time for me to go back.
But why? He repeated, thoroughly astonished. I thought you and I...
Carter, it's been good between us. For a while there, I thought I really loved you.
You thought?
He felt bewildered, betrayed.
For long moments, Doreen didn't answer. Finally, she said,
You don't love me, Carter. I'm just a convenience for you. A body to warm your bed and stroke your ego.
That's nonsense, he snapped. What's your real reason? Is it somebody else, that Indian kid?
Of course not, she said, genuinely shocked. It's you. You don't care about me, not really. You don't even care about my ideas, my work.
That nanomachine business? You want to terraform Mars with nanomachines?
Part of it, yes. So people can come here and live and work safely, in comfort.
Nano crap, he snarled. It's nonsense and you know it. Her face deadly serious, Doreen replied,
I'm not going to argue with you about it. I'm leaving when the resupply flight comes in.
And what about me?
What about you, Carter?
Her voice sounded almost sorrowful.
How do you feel about me? Do you feel anything at all except your own needs?
Puzzled and slightly angry, he replied, For God's sake, Doreen, we're living together, aren't we? We share our lives, our work, our bodies, everything. She fell silent again. Isn't that enough? He demanded.
Very softly, she said, You've never said you love me.
So that's it, he thought. The same old ploy. They always want to hear you plight your troth. Doreen, love is a big word.
It's a four-letter word, the same as fuck.
Carlton shook his head inside the inflated helmet. I'll never understand them, he told himself. Never. Trying to control his growing irritation, he grasped Doreen by the wrist and started back to the airlock. You're not leaving, Doreen, he said almost in a growl. I want you here. I need you here. She didn't reply as she let him lead her back to the dome. She simply pulled the wire from his suit collar and let it trail in the dust behind her. And Carlton remembered a line from Hamlet, Where the offense is, let the great axe fall. Tithonium Base, Sunset.
As James